Hello and good morning. Thanks for joining us once again. We're back with another episode brought to you by UNDP Africa, where we're talking AfCFTA in detail and how it actually supports or it can be a catalyst for economic development across Africa, but also what role does it play in achieving SDGs? I am joined by Professor David Locke, who is a specialist in African trade policy and trade negotiations at the London School of Economics. And I asked him what key areas are really critical and important in getting the AfCFTA to move faster.
The first issue is the liberalization of the tariffs. That has been agreed. There's still a bit more work to be done to get the new customs schedules and all these things for each country and to be able to publish them so that or put them on a website so that you know everyone knows what the tariff schedule is. So I think that's the first step. It's a technical thing. You know, we don't normally think about the customs people. But this is what they do. That's their job. That's what they're there for. So that's the first step. If we can get that right, you know, that will then begin to open up the trade. The next step is to finish the negotiations on the rules of origin. This is the rules that says that a product from one African country could enter another African country according to the tariff schedule that has been agreed. So you see the two things go together.
Yeah.
A product from another country, a third country outside of Africa, cannot, you know, enter in the same way. It's almost like giving the goods a passport.
One big argument that has been brought out, you know, since it was even launched in 2018, I think has been, what are we going to trade really if we are not producing? Where does that leave this big, massive trade agreement?
Yeah. You know, it's not quite true to say we are not producing.
We're not producing enough.
Enough, yeah. Yes. We are not producing enough. And obviously, the variety also is, is you know, still somewhat limited, etc. But actually, that's... what this deal is about is to enable us to produce more, to give us the incentive to produce more. The problem is when you have a small market, your ambition is limited to that market. And so you cannot really grow the business in a small market. So you need a bigger market, which then gives you the incentive to grow the business. You then innovate. Do you go into a partnership with others, you know, that could help you scale up the production, etc. So, but think about it. Without the market, we are not going to be looking for these partnerships about scaling up and so on and so forth. But with the market, it raises our ambition, and we can then see the opportunity, and we can scale up. So, I like to give the example of, say, an airline like Ethiopian Airline. If it was only operating in Ethiopia, in that small market, it will not be the kind of company it is. But because it is operating all over Africa, it's become a massive company. So, you know, you can apply that to, you know, the same analogy to goods and so on. So it will give, you know, it could be a young 21-year-old sitting in Kigali right now dreaming about the future and then realizing, oh, there is a big market, and then decide to do something which will surprise all of us. If you think about it, many of these big firms, whether it is Microsoft, it is Google or Facebook, that's how they all started. Somebody had a dream and they could see the markets, the market potential, and they went after the dream.
1.3 billion is a big market.
Yeah, exactly. It's a big market
for us not to actually be able to exploit it. Dr. David, you give us so much hope in the AfCFTA, and I like it because, you know, it's better to understand it in that perspective that it cannot be achieved now. But the long-term goal, you know, is to have...
Yeah, well, when you say it cannot be achieved now, as I said, if you can take those two steps, those two technical steps, your custom schedules and the rules of origin, the passport, if we can complete those two, then our market is ready to operate. So that's where it is stuck. And because it is stuck, they say, okay, let a small subset of 8 countries that, you know, are ready to, you know, already have their custom schedules, and then they're willing to operate without these other sectors that don't yet have, they have not agreed on the passport for the goods. So they're saying, okay, let's leave those sectors out, or we could use, you know, current rules for COMESA or ESC. So if I send something to Rwanda, it has to do with automobile parts or something, then the ESC rules would apply.
Yeah. Which brings me to my, you know, next point of discussion, and I'm glad you brought the regional blocks in. Do you think it would actually speed up implementation if we actually managed to get the regional blocks together and be able to at least get them to implement some of the things they've said in the past? The ESC obviously has made great strides, even SADC itself in terms of customs.
Yeah. Okay, the problem with the RECs is that they also are presiding over a very small market. You know, that's the other limitation. The market is relatively small. If you take ESC, the combined GDP of these countries in ESC is probably, you know, that of, you know, a city like Manchester in the UK. You know, so the market is still relatively small. You know, that's the limiting thing. But having said that, I think that the RECs have a very important role to play. You know, because there's still trade going on between the countries in each REC. It's only when they're trading outside of their REC that the AFCFTA applies, if you see what I mean. So you would have businesses that, for them, their niche is in, say, ESC or in COMESA or in SADC or in ECOWAS. They've seen that as their niche. But you would also have businesses that are looking beyond you know, ECOWAS or SADC or whatever. So, you know, so the two are not opposed to each other. They can work hand in hand because AFCFTA applies outside of the REC, or if you like, between the RECs, between countries that are not in the in the same REC.
One of the things I hear a lot of, especially when we do stories around AFCFTA, I get a lot of people that ask me what role the REs, especially for SMEs, and to what extent can the AFCFTA really grow that sector?
Yeah, I think, again, you know, it's a question of the incentives that are there, which is always what motivates economic behavior. You know, it's incentive. You know, that's why other systems failed, like communism, because the incentive was taking away from people to take the initiative and so on. So I do think that the RECs, the SMEs would, you know, they're emerging. I think there's scope for them to grow. You know, SMEs are typically family businesses. You know, families will take advantage of opportunities as they see them. Some businesses, as you know, grow and are passed on from one generation to the other. And each generation brings its own new ideas according to what is current and so on. So I think all of that would happen. As you rightly point out, it's already happening. The number of unicorns around the continent already. The AFCFTA, I think, would provide the incentive for this, you know, for more of this to happen.
To flourish. Yeah. I mean, history has shown us that it's not easy to integrate continents, especially in terms of business. I mean, look at Brexit. Or the EU itself that we've drawn on in the past. But even at the signing of the AFCFTA, we saw skepticism from countries like Nigeria. Does that create any fear, especially when you look around and you realize that what we're doing seems to not have worked for certain mm-hmm. countries that we thought.
No, that's a good, a good question. You know, the AfCFTA is about trade. The EU started also mainly as a trading organization, and then it has grown into a monetary union, and they're coordinating even foreign policy, defense policy. They've, you know, become a union, a huge mandate to the Commission and the EU institutions for a large area of policy. AfCFTA is only about trade. It's only one area of policy. My own view is that the African continent, we should be very careful at this point and just keep it to that one area of policy, which is trade. Countries like Nigeria, South Africa, which are big, and you would expect them that, you know, they are the ones that will benefit the most. You know, they are surprisingly the ones that feel threatened, you yeah. know, that by, you know,
opening
you know, which,
up.
Yeah, you know, but then also that tells you.
Maybe because their trading partners seem to be outside
no,
of the
no,
country.
No, no, no. You know, it is. No, I think part of their problem is because they're big. You know, take a country like Nigeria. Nigeria has never been a country that has been keen on trade agreements. The reason is the Nigerian market is big. There are a number of businesses in Nigeria that are satisfied with that market and as their market, and they want to monopolize that market for themselves. I think they're short-sighted because, you know, they, whereas, you know, Nigerian population is big, you can do, you can even do more outside of Nigeria. And you see some Nigerian firms that are operating across the continent that outside of the Nigerian market, if you take Dangote, I don't think Dangote would be as big as it is if it was only confined to Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
And you see some of the Nigerian banks that all over, you know, all over Africa now, you know, also doing really very well. So I think it is short-sighted, that kind of approach. The same with South Africa, you know, that they too are very protective of their market. I think it is really short-sighted that they would create more opportunities. They could even grow their economy faster if they open themselves to competition from others in their own market. Because when you do that, you're becoming more efficient. You know, because in order to compete, you have to do things better, you know. So I think it's short-sighted, you know, but, you know, that's the politics of it.
I just want to wind up with this because this is a development kind of conference, and it's great to really have this chat with you on the sidelines. One of the things that for me stood out since I've been attending a few sessions has been financing, and we need money, and we need money, and we need money. But a lot of times in Africa, we need money. We've also learned that we cannot develop on aid. There's got to be different ways, really, for the continent to wake up and, you know, be able to achieve sustainable, especially sustainable development through strategic and sustainable projects. And AfCFTA stands to be one of those. So because we can't do aid, so we need fair trade. We need smarter trade. Do you see the AfCFTA as a catalyst for sustainable development on the continent? Does it have the power?
Okay. You know, firstly, the first part of your observation that, you know, aid is not going to be sufficient to, as you would say, move the needle in Africa. I think that's quite correct. Because already, in terms of our revenues from trade, right now we're close to $500 billion. A year in terms of trade revenues. In terms of aid, you're looking, you know, I mean here grants, not loans, you're looking at about $30 billion. So you can see half a trillion and 30 billion. You see the difference?
Yeah. Then, it's half, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's not even...
halfway.
Okay, 10% or something. Yeah. Or, you know, just over 10%. Then when you also look at remittances, you know, of the diaspora, already remittances now are about 80 billion a year. So that's double foreign aid already. Just the what you and all of us who live outside of our countries, what we send back home is about
it's 80 billion.
It's double what we receive. Foreign direct investment is about 40 billion. So if you add 30 and 40 and 30 for
remittances.
For, no, 80 for remittances, foreign direct investment, 40 billion, 30 billion for aid, all of that comes to about 150 billion. When we are saying that already we are now almost at 500 billion on trade. So the arithmetic is clear that we need to grow our trade. And the only way we can grow our trade is removing these barriers to trade among ourselves. That will stimulate the production, which, as you rightly point out, we also need to do more on the production with more variety and so on. So that's the only way forward. You know, for me, I've always wondered why our leaders are not preaching this message, you know, somehow. You know, some leaders are, you know, so I don't want to paint everybody with the same brush, but not with the urgency. Many of them, not with the urgency that you would expect, you know, that this is such a vital area for all of us. I admire your country, Rwanda, because I think they understand, the leadership understands this aspect. And I see an outfit like the Rwanda Development Corporation, what they're doing. Because they get it, you know, they get it and they, you know, they know what they need to do. But that's not the case everywhere. But, you know, still, you know, that doesn't mean, you know, that other countries would not see the light, would not approach things with the same urgency. So I'm still optimistic. Now, you also talk about fair trade. And here I do think our partners in the EU, the US, China, UK, I think our partners need to do more for us on trade. We don't yet have a good deal.
Thanks again for listening in. And as always, here's to peace and profits. Have a lovely week ahead.